species as part of his research. And he was aware that the process was a very primitive stage. I mean, what they do typically is they take genes and put them into a gun, and they shoot the gun with millions of genes into a plate of millions of cells, hoping that some of the genes make it into the DNA of some of those cells. And they don't know where it ends up in the genome. They don't know what its effects are. They don't know what kind of mutations it causes. And so they, what they do also is they then clone that product into a plant, and that causes another hundreds or thousands of mutations and changes in the plant. And sometimes the plant functions, usually it doesn't. And he was aware of these techniques and the technologies and all of the uncertainties, and he became shocked. He was shocked because he realized that there was one company, actually several companies, but primarily Monsanto, was about to introduce genetically modified crops throughout the Midwest, growing soy, corn, cottonseed, and also canola in Canada, and that they were going to feed the products of this infant science to the entire population. Moreover, he also knew from basic plant breeding that genes cross, you know, pollen cross-pollinates and genes spread, and that once these things were outdoors, there was no way to 100% recall them. And so what was about to happen was unprecedented on Earth, overstepping the normal billions of years of evolution and creating new organisms overnight. This company was patenting these organisms and introducing them to the environment and the food supply, and no one knew. And so I was in this room of elite people, because we were elite because we were about to be, we were told about what was about to happen. And my reaction as a, with a background in marketing, education, communications, is people need to know about this. People need to be told. And I realized I was talking to myself. So I set off to start to document the risks, and then ultimately the enormous industry manipulation and political collusion that went into the approval of GMOs. We discovered, for example, that the scientists at the FDA were appalled that GMOs would be introduced without proper testing. They said GMOs and all these unpredicted side effects could create allergies and toxins, new diseases, nutritional problems. They had urged their superiors over and over again to require long-term studies. But the person in charge of policy had been put there because the White House had told the FDA, promote biotechnology to increase U.S. exports. And so they created a new position, the Deputy Commissioner of Policy, for a particular person. And that person was Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, who later became Monsanto's vice president. And while he was installed at the FDA in charge, he said, he ignored the scientists, completely denied the existence of their warnings. The policy claimed that the agency wasn't aware of information showing that GM foods were different, and on that basis said absolutely no testing was necessary. The FDA doesn't even have to tell, doesn't have to be told by the biotech companies who are introducing a GM crop. There's no approval process. It's just a voluntary consultation process. And then Michael Taylor was just assigned by the Obama administration to be the U.S. food safety czar. So I say the person who is responsible for probably more food-related illnesses and deaths in human history is now in charge of the U.S. food safety system. Now, what has happened since 1992's policy produced by Michael Taylor is that we verified the concerns by the scientists. Last year, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, after researching the matter, came to the conclusion that every doctor in America should prescribe a non-GMO diet to every person in America. They said it's not a casual relationship between GMOs and ill health. It is a causal one based on the results of animal feeding studies, which they say show infertility, accelerated aging, organ damage, gastrointestinal problems, all sorts of issues, immune system problems, and that these may be accruing in the population as a result of genetic engineering. But no one knows because there's no post-marketing surveillance, no human clinical trials. In fact, the only human feeding study ever conducted shows that genes that we eat from genetically engineered food actually take up residence inside the DNA of the bacteria living inside us and continue to function. That means long after we stop eating genetically modified foods, we may have these foreign genetically modified proteins produced continuously inside of us. So what we're doing now is we're creating a campaign for healthier eating in America, which is designed to create a tipping point of consumer rejection against GMOs to force it out of the market. And we know that this could work. And Earl's point was very well taken about grassroots, individual efforts mounting real change. And in the case of food, we have far more power than we have in trying to convince the government of something, because we can get rid of GMOs in the food supply without any change in government policy. We can do it by changing the food company's policy. And what is their policy? To make money. And what happens if they stop making money because one of their ingredients happens to be unwanted by a growing percentage of the population? They'll change the ingredient. We know that happened in Europe. In Europe, in 1999, the biotech industry had predicted in January that they would take over 95% of all the seeds in the world and become genetically engineered within 5 years. But 3 weeks after their prediction, the gag order on one of the world's leading scientists, Dr. Arpad Pusztai, was lifted by an order of parliament, and he was finally able to talk about what happened. He had been given a $3 million grant by the UK government to create the testing protocol that would evaluate the safety of GMOs. So he put through that protocol a potato that was supposed to be completely harmless, genetically engineered to produce an insecticide. But what happened was, within 10 days, the rats that ate those potatoes had potentially precancerous cell growth in their digestive tract, smaller brain, livers, and testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, damaged immune system. He went public with his concerns, was a hero for 2 days at his institute. And then two phone calls were allegedly placed from the UK Prime Minister's office, a very pro-GM, pro-genetic engineering UK government. Two phone calls were forwarded through the receptionist to the director of that institute. The next morning, Dr. Pusztai was fired from his job after 35 years, silenced with threats of a lawsuit, and then under attack, his reputation was destroyed because they claimed that he had made mistakes, but he wasn't able to defend himself. But when he was able to speak, February 16, 1999, within a month, 750 articles were written in Europe. It divided society into two warring blocks on the GMO issue, according to one editor, and the tipping point was achieved by the end of April of 1999, and virtually within a week, virtually every major food company committed to stop using GM ingredients in their European brands, but not in their U.S. brands, where the mainstream media did not cover it, where the average American thinks they've never eaten a GM food in their life, and most people don't know what it means. And so if we have a proper education effort in the United States, we could create an avalanche against GMOs like we had in Europe, and this is our plan for our campaign for healthier eating in America. So I know that's more than you asked for, Earl, but that gives you where we were then, where we are now, and I haven't even discussed the health dangers, which is the most compelling portion.
Wow, that is amazing. And, you know, that example you gave right there is one for everyone listening to hear that efforts, you know, we really need to do it whatever we can, like I said, where we are, because it just shows that if you get enough public support, if you get the numbers of people, and if they vote with their dollars, you can make a change. You can make a change in any area that you're passionate about, in the spectrum of infringement of liberties that we're all concerned about, the folks with Republic magazine that follow the types of issues that we cover, and this is definitely one of the areas. And I just want to say that I really applaud what you're doing, your whole campaign and what you're doing. And I hope that before we're done today, we can certainly take a look at how people can help you with it. Maybe go into what you think is really important for people to understand about this whole issue. And like you said, that some of the health concerns, maybe giving us some examples and so forth, as you so masterfully do.
Well, there's a lot of diseases on the rise since genetically modified foods were introduced in 1996. At that point, 7% of Americans had three or more chronic illnesses. It jumped to 13% in just 9 years. Food allergies doubled in less time. Autism's been skyrocketing. And of course, there's obesity, diabetes, and certain types of cancers. We cannot rule out GMOs as a major contributor to these, because the process has all sorts of changes that can create allergies and toxins and carcinogens, etc. Now, there's categories of diseases. We talked about what the American Academy of Environmental Medicine said, and for example, immune system problems. Well, allergies are an example of an immune system problem. When the genetically modified soy was introduced to the UK, soy allergy skyrocketed by 50%. We know that there's a skin prick test that can be done to evaluate the allergenicity of something, and in one small study, certain people can react to the GM variety, but not to a non-GM wild variety. They also found a completely new allergen in the soy that wasn't supposed to be there, and even an existing allergen in soy, which is called trypsin inhibitor, which is as much as 7 times higher in the genetically modified variety than in a non-GM variety when they were cooked. In addition, there's more herbicide residues on soy. Now, soy is genetically engineered to drink poison, not to die when sprayed with a particular brand of herbicide called Roundup. Monsanto sells Roundup herbicide, and they sell Roundup Ready soybeans. They sell them as a package so that you can use Roundup on Roundup Ready soybeans. It won't kill the soybeans, but if you used Roundup on any natural plants, it would kill the plants. So it's used to kill weeds, and the Roundup Ready soy drinks the poison without dying. So there's more herbicide residues on the soy, and so those may be related to increased allergens. In addition, when mice ate the Roundup Ready soy, they had reduced digestive enzymes by as much as 77%, and that also could contribute to allergies, not only to soy, but to a wide range of foods. Even the Roundup Ready protein, which is produced by the inserted gene, has properties of a known allergen, of a dust mite allergen. So there's plenty of ways in which genetically modified soy might be the cause of the increase in not only soy allergies, but other allergies as well. There's also allergies among people eating genetically modified corn. Corn is either introduced to not die when sprayed with herbicide, or there's something called BT corn, engineered to produce its own poison, its own insect-killing poison that splits open the stomach of any insect that's unfortunate enough to take a bite of the BT crop. Now, the BT comes from the word Bacillus thuringiensis. It's a bacterium in the soil. And in natural form, you can gather up the soil bacterium into a spray and use it to spray on plants to kill insects. And it washes off, it biodegrades in the sun. You certainly don't want to drink it. When you buy BT spray bottles, it says do not take internally. But if it's sprayed like accidentally on you, or you accidentally get it on your skin or something, you can have a reaction. In fact, about 500 people in the Pacific Northwest developed allergic type reactions and flu-like symptoms when they were sprayed with BT spray from airplanes when it was used to treat gypsy moths. Now they take that same BT gene that produces the BT toxin from the soil bacterium, and they make some changes so that it produces a more toxic version, and they put it into corn and cotton so that every single cell of the plants has a little spray bottle producing a variety of the BT toxin, which is thousands of times more concentrated than the spray version. And now people in India, by the thousands who are harvesting the BT cotton, are getting the same allergic and flu-like symptoms that the 500 people in the Pacific Northwest got when they were being sprayed with natural BT. But the people in India aren't being sprayed. They're just touching the cotton plants that are designed to produce this BT toxin in higher concentrations. Now, when they feed the BT corn to mice or rats, they develop immune system responses that suggest that it is, in fact, an allergen or an immunogen which could cause big reactions in people. But it gets worse. It's not just evidence of immune system reactions. There's also evidence of toxicity. Even in Monsanto's own study, when reanalyzed by independent scientists, they found signs of toxicity in the major organs, especially the liver and kidneys, the major detoxifiers, and that Monsanto skillfully avoided commenting on in their own studies. Now, in India, when they allow animals to graze on cotton plants after their cotton is harvested, they can graze on the natural cotton plants without problem, but when they graze on the BT cotton plants, thousands of sheep died, and many, many buffalo died, and goats and cows. In fact, I interviewed some people who had allowed their buffalo to graze on natural cotton plants for up to 8 years, but when they grazed on BT cotton plants, it took only one day to kill all of the village's 13 buffalo, as well as 26 sheep and goats. In northern India, they feed cottonseed cake to buffaloes, and most of them actually have reproductive problems like prolapsed uteruses or abortions or infertility or premature deliveries, as well as skin problems and disruption of their milk supply and deaths among both adults and the calves. In Germany, one farmer claimed that all 12 of his cows died because of eating a certain variety of BT corn. About two dozen farmers claimed that their pigs or cows became sterile from a BT corn variety. And in the Philippines, virtually an entire village of 100 people developed skin, respiratory, and intestinal reactions while they were breathing in the BT pollen from an adjacent BT cornfield. When the same seeds were planted in four more villages, the same symptoms returned during the time of pollination. Now, we mentioned earlier that the only human feeding study showed that the genes, in this case they studied soybeans, the herbicide-tolerant genes from soy transferred into the DNA of the bacteria living inside our intestines and continue to function. This means that if the same thing happens with BT corn, then it means that eating a corn chip might turn our intestinal bacteria into living pesticide factories, producing BT toxin continuously inside of us. When I mention this at medical conferences, doctors come up to me afterwards or raise questions from the floor saying, we have seen an enormous increase in gastrointestinal problems in our practices since GMOs were introduced. Maybe the BT toxin is to blame. Now, we've talked about allergies and some toxicity. There's also reproductive problems. When they fed mice corn that was both BT as well as Roundup Ready in the same corn, the more corn that was fed to the mice, the fewer babies were born and the smaller the babies were. In Russia, they fed Roundup Ready soy to female rats, and most of the offspring died within 3 weeks, compared to only a 10% death rate. When they fed it to, also the offspring were smaller in the soy group and could not reproduce. This was the GM soy compared to the non-GM soy. When they fed it to male rats, the testicles changed color from pink to blue. And in Italy, when they fed male mice the soy, their testicles also changed, showing damage in the young sperm cells, and the offspring of mother and father mice that were fed GM soy, the DNA of the embryos functioned differently when compared to parent mice who were fed non-GM soy. So these are some examples of allergens and toxins and reproductive problems that are associated with the GM crops that are already on the market that we eat every day, because soy and corn derivatives are in the vast majority of processed foods. Now, you won't necessarily get gene transfer from something that's refined like soybean oil or high fructose corn syrup because the DNA is missing, and you won't necessarily have BT toxin in that very, very refined place, but you still may end up with changes that occurred in the plant as a result of the huge, massive collateral damage that occurs during the process of genetic engineering that could make all of these derivatives, from soy lecithin to dextrose and maltodextrin, harmful, and they might be contributing to the rise of diseases in the U.S.
Hmm. Wow. That's, I'll tell you, it's really something when you think about it. It really is. We can, at this point, if you'd like, I know some questions have come in. If you'd rather continue on with some information and then take those a little later, then we can. Either way, what's your preference?
Well, I need to make sure that people know how to avoid eating GMOs, because that's a question that everyone asks as the first question if I don't cover it. So let me answer that question first, then we'll open it up to other questions. But we have to end. We have to make sure that we end with what can people do besides avoiding GMOs in their own life. And that's a big question, and I've got a big answer. In fact, I've got some very good news. And you don't want to hang up now in this depressing state when you realize that the food we have is toxic and allergenic. You definitely want to hang around for what we can do and the good news that's happening. So how do we avoid eating GMOs? Well, if you go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com, we have a list of brands that don't use GMOs in 22 different food categories. And if you have a product that's not on that list, you can always evaluate it using the four tips. If something is organic, it's not allowed to use GMOs. Some companies put a non-GMO label on their product. You can also look at the shopping guide, as I mentioned, which is the third tip, or you can read the list of at-risk ingredients, which is also there on that site. And the at-risk ingredients are about 100 different derivatives that may, or some are maybe derived by GM crops, and some are always derived by GM crops. And so you can learn to avoid them. Now, you'll find that most of the processed foods will have a GM derivative in them. So shopping around the outside of the supermarket or in natural food stores will be a lot easier to avoid GMOs than buying in the processed foods in the center of the food aisle. So I'll take those questions.
Okay, let me and just before I take the questions, let me say, if I might, that if you have questions for Jeffrey today, anyone that's listening, and you're on the phone bridge line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and we'll see that you'd like your line unmuted, and we can do so that you can speak with him. If you're on the internet listening that way, then there, just underneath the link that you find on the page that you're on, there'll be a small box there. Type your question in. It'd be helpful if you put a first name and a city and state. Go ahead and hit submit, and we'll see that question and make sure that it gets asked. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and move to, we have some that have come in over the internet. And the first one here, I don't know what happened, but Harley in Monk's Corner, South Carolina. Whatever you were trying to write there, Harley, didn't come through. I don't see any text. It looks like maybe a quote symbol, and that was it. Nothing else came through. So if you did want to submit a question, try again. Somehow it didn't happen. Glenn in Tampa. Jeff, glad you are feeling better. I have made an effort to contact companies that make it a point to avoid using and labeling their ingredients as non-GMO. I have written to Gerber, Trader Joe's, Kinko's, Kettle Foods, for example, to thank them for their foresight and consideration, particularly the labeling. Do you recommend this as a type of positive reinforcement activism?
Absolutely. It's a wonderful thing to let the companies know who has switched to non-GM policies that you're supporting them. Likewise, to let companies know that whose products you used to enjoy that you've stopped eating, and tell them that you will return to eating their foods when they have committed to using non-GM ingredients. Now, there's an additional emphasis that you can add when calling companies that have switched to non-GMO. You could suggest that they enroll their products, if they haven't already, in a organization's third-party verification system called the Non-GMO Project. It's available at nongmoproject.org, and they are sweeping through the natural food industry as the new standard for non-GMO claims. Even if products are organic, we should be looking for the Non-GMO Project verified seal or label on the package, because organic products, although they're not allowed to use GMOs, there's no requirements in organic that things are tested. But with the Non-GMO Project, if a product uses soy or corn or any of the other at-risk ingredients, there's 8 GM food crops, then they have to test for it in order to get the verification. And so it's something that it's being adopted by organics as well as the natural food industry. So let your favorite non-GMO food supplier know that this is something you'll be looking for on their package very soon. Now, the 8 GM food crops are soy and corn, we've mentioned them, canola, cotton, sugar from sugar beets, Hawaiian papaya, that's only from Hawaii, and a little bit of zucchini and yellow squash. There's no more GM potatoes or tomatoes on the market, and there's all these seedless watermelons and all that stuff that has nothing to do with genetic engineering. That's just crossbreeding. It's only those 8 crops. There's also genetically modified bovine growth hormone, which is a drug from genetically modified E. coli bacteria that's injected into cows to increase milk supply, and the milk is different. It has more pus, more antibiotics, more bovine growth hormone, and most importantly, higher levels of a hormone called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1, which is linked to cancer, which is why the American Nurses Association and the American Public Health Association have condemned the use of RBGH and why we've created a tipping point already in driving it out of most of the dairies in the United States. Walmart kicked it out a couple of years ago. Danone and Yoplait kicked it out last year. Starbucks 2 years ago. It's on its way out because of consumers making healthier non-GMO choices. Hope that answers the question.
Yeah, thanks. I really hear you, too, and I hope everyone is listening to this. You can, one of your most powerful and incredible forces is your voting with your dollars, because it's just like he said, it's a business to them, and if you are gonna, if your dollars are not gonna go to them anymore, it's like turning the spigot off, and they don't want that to happen. They want to turn that wide open, so they will respond to what you demand that they have because they want your dollars. So
now I want to add something. When you're talking to those companies or emailing them, you can pass on news of the tipping point. Here comes the good news that I was talking about earlier, some of it. The fastest growing claim for home brands by stores in 2009 was non-GMO, up 67%. In addition, Supermarket News, which is the trade journal that the food executives look to for trends, predicts that 2010 will show an increase in consumer awareness to an unprecedented level in the United States about GMOs, which is exactly what we are engineering in our campaign for healthier eating. In fact, they cited our Institute for Responsible Technology and the Non-GMO Project as the two reasons why there'll be an unprecedented upsurge of awareness about GMOs. And so we are creating the tipping point, and the food industry is already responding by making the claims and making the predictions.
Great. That is definitely good news. Richard in San Francisco, why can we not introduce charges against Michael Taylor and indirectly against the person who appointed him for attempted murder and several other associated charges, since we know GMO foods will cause death and injury or many kinds, and since this is done knowing the negative things GMOs will do, is this not the legitimate use of attorneys who otherwise are mostly used to harass people and make all types of conflict worse so they can make more money? This would redeem their reputation. Where are the intelligent and courageous lawyers when they are needed?
That's a very well-spoken question. So here's the answer to that. You know, in my book, Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods, I outlined 65 health risks. Now, each time someone discovers an adverse finding, they mysteriously lose funding or are fired, or like the woman who discovered the high levels of offspring death among rats fed GM soy, she was told she couldn't do any more research on GMOs because her boss was being pressured by his boss. She was attacked and vilified. Documents were burnt on her desk and samples were stolen. When the person found out that the high residues of Roundup on Roundup-ready crops might be related to birth defects, this was in Argentina, he was attacked mercilessly by the probiotic side. Four aggressive people showed up at his place of business and tried to interrogate him. Over and over again, dozens of scientists who discovered problems or even criticized the technology are shut out of the ability to do follow-up research or initial research. So we don't have a body of research sufficient to prove that a single crop causes death or disease in a particular type in humans. If we had enough money, we would probably draw those conclusions. We don't have a smoking gun, but we have a smoking shotgun. We have lines of converging evidence which form an unmistakable, irrefutable, overwhelming evidence data set. And from that, we can draw conclusions, but it would be difficult to rely on that for a multi-million-dollar lawsuit at this point. So the lawyers and the plaintiffs would be hesitant to move forward based on the state of the science as it is. We hope to create, with more funding, more research to demonstrate that these products have been damaging the human condition in the United States. And I'm not sure that there's a court that would be ready to receive the current levels of information, because usually if you discover initial, like, for example, the high death rate among rats that ate the GM soy. That's astounding. 53% of the animals, their offspring, died compared to 10%. And yet, no organization has followed up to replicate it. This was done in 2005. It's an easy, cheap research. You could do it for $10,000, but no one.
Are you there?
We don't have. Yes, go ahead.
You cut out for a minute. I missed about. I don't know if it happened to other people, but I missed about maybe 20 seconds of what you were saying there last.
Well, basically the thing is this: it's very difficult to build a case when you lose all your scientists and you lose all the data because they've been threatened, fired, stripped of responsibilities, forced out, or denounced. So we're trying to build a case. I'm not sure there's one ready for the courts, but there's certainly enough ready for medical doctors to say, we've reviewed it, and it's clearly dangerous and should not have been introduced, and it should be withdrawn immediately, and it's certainly enough for us to make a wise, non-GMO, healthier choice.
Okay, great. Glenn in Tampa has kind of a three-tier lineup of questions, so I'll just, you know, maybe take them in sections. We know that yellow corn primarily and now white corn are the major GMO corn crops. Are any other types currently at risk of becoming GMO?
Well, there is the possibility of cross-pollinating into blue corn and yellow corn. Fortunately, popcorn is not GMO and does not cross-pollinate. Corn is a big cross-pollinator. The pollen itself is usually viable for a couple hours, but it can actually remain viable in the wind for up to 24 hours. So imagine how far pollen can travel in 24 hours with a fast-blowing wind. One friend of mine calculated it could go 500 miles with certain conditions out of Texas. So, yes, corn is cross-pollinating. It is difficult to find 100% clean corn, even the seed. It's possible, but not easy. You got to test for it. In fact, the non-GMO project does not require a zero percentage for testing because that would be impractical, and you wouldn't be able to afford to throw away all the things that have as little as 1 in 10,000 seeds. So they have a threshold that's allowable for their labels. So corn cross-pollinates, as does canola, even the sugar beets now, and they can cross-pollinate with Swiss chard and table beets at the seed growing location in Willamette Valley. So that's the answer to that question.
Okay. And then Glenn also asked, from having read Seeds of Deception, Monsanto appears to be positioning itself to modify and thereby own as many seed types as possible. Once they have recreated their Frankenfood seed, can they then plant them in test fields prior to approval and thereby contaminate the unadulterated food in the environment now?
Great question. So he's referring to the book Seeds of Deception, which is my first book. The subtitle is Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. And it talks about the stories of the scientists, the corruption at the FDA, the corruption involved, the promotion of the milk, etc. Yes, you're absolutely right. First of all, Monsanto's consultant, Arthur Anderson, had asked what their ideal future was in 15 to 20 years, and they described a world in which 100% of all the commercial seeds were genetically modified and patented, and Anderson Consulting worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. And they were on course for this until the Arpad Pusztai scientist from the UK was able to go public with his concerns, and it derailed the moving train. But nonetheless, virtually all the fruit and vegetables, grains and beans that we eat daily have a GMO counterpart in a laboratory or field tested. Now, field trials are very dangerous because they grow them outdoors. They've grown over 100 species of GMOs in 50,000 field trials in the United States. Many of them can cross-pollinate. And cross-pollination is only one way that genes can transfer. You see, I was shown a baggie of canola that had been scraped off the mud of the boot of a worker in one of these field trials in Australia. And if he hadn't been scraped into the baggie, he could have been walked around and it would have just been planted, like happens in the roads coming off the port in Japan, where all over these roads are canola growing because the seeds that they import into the by these ships and get put into the trucks, they blow off the trucks. So you can have all sorts of ways, both through natural ways and mistakes by man, to have this cross-pollinate. And yes, we are in a situation where we don't even know the level of contamination. I mean, for example, there's no GM rice that has been introduced and commercialized, but it was field trialed. And in 2006, the Secretary of Agriculture announced that there was a contamination from a field trial that stopped in 2001, but somehow it contaminated the long grain rice in the United States, and it ultimately will cost the rice industry as much as $1.2 billion. And now Bayer Crop Science, which is the owner of that wayward rice, is now paying out awards, court-ordered penalties of over $1 million to various farmers. So they're going to feel the heat from this cross-pollination for sure. And now I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Glenn also asked, can you name other crops that are on the horizon that are awaiting approval now?
Well, we had a near miss in India where they wanted to approve a genetically modified eggplant this year. But fortunately, we had mobilized the public and they responded, and the environment minister struck down the approval on February 10th. And I'm proud to say that I had a big role in that. In fact, I released my book, Genetic Roulette, in India last year. And while I was there, I helped launch a film based on the second book in India, which became the most talked about film in the country last year, galvanizing public support against the introduction of GMOs. So when the Minister of Environment held his seven meetings for hearings to hear what public had to say, 8,000 people showed up. Another 100,000 people fasted for a day to protest the introduction of the eggplant. Other products that they want to introduce there are potatoes and cauliflower and okra. And you see, I would have to say that literally every major fruit and vegetable has a GM counterpart waiting to be introduced. They introduced alfalfa, which is the fifth largest grain in the United States. It's used for dairy cows, but it was declared illegal because it was introduced without a proper environmental impact study. And so the USDA came up with an EIS, which turned out to be completely bogus. And so over 200,000 people emailed or filed comments during their comment period, which ended on March 3rd. And now Monsanto has filed a lawsuit that was going up to the Supreme Court on April 27th saying, oh, yeah, so it wasn't approved properly, but we shouldn't have to stop selling it in the meantime. So they're asking the Supreme Court to allow them to continue to sell their alfalfa, even though it was acknowledged that it was introduced illegally by the USDA. They want to introduce wheat. They want to introduce rice. Basically everything, but there's a big movement to try and get wheat and rice introduced as well as to get alfalfa back on track.
Okay. Pam in Palm Beach Gardens asks, once a crop is GM grown, can the crop return to a natural process or is it contaminated?
We have no technology to reverse the introduction of a gene and to take it out. And likewise, we have no technology to clean up a contaminated gene pool once it gets out. We can't find the crops by looking at them and telling at a distance which one's GM versus not GM because they look the same. It'd be like trying to recall salmon from the ocean or mosquitoes from the environment. So hopefully we'll eventually create a new technology to identify at a distance, but we don't have one either to clean up the field, the ecosystem, or to change an individual plant.
Okay. Thomas Lombardo in Middleton, Connecticut, I think you covered this. So is there a risk in popcorn? I think you said there currently
is. I mentioned that, yeah. No risk.
Okay. And then Dorley in Centennial, Colorado, how many countries in Europe have forbidden the import of GMO foods? I believe Switzerland is one of them.
Well, actually, what they avoid is the planting of GMOs. No one has put a moratorium on the importation of GM foods in Europe. There are some countries in South America and in Africa that do so. Zambia, for example, refused food aid that was genetically engineered. But in Europe, because of the tipping point 11 years ago, the food companies don't allow GMOs to be used as ingredients in their food. And so it's not the government that made the ban, it's the food companies themselves responding to pressure from us, the top of the food chain. So they also require labeling if anything does contain GMOs, which keeps the companies honest.
Okay. Glenn in Tampa, is not Michael Taylor now working in the president's current administration as a food czar? I think you mentioned that before.
Yes, he's the food safety czar in the U.S., yes.
All right. Okay, and then let's see. I'm going to flip over here and see. Just check real quick and see what we've got over here in this other area. You know, this information is just so crucial, and you're really giving examples. I just can't stress enough how important that is. Sometimes we think we can't get Washington to respond, and we try to do all kinds of machinations through the political structure. But sometimes it could be done at the grassroots level, right where we are, applying pressure in ways that will affect the dollars of corporations that are trampling on us, and that's so effective. I really hear that. That's a theme running through what you're saying. A couple of things I wanted to make sure that get mentioned today is that you're one of the key presenters at the 2010 Health Freedom Expo being held at the Long Beach Convention Center in Long Beach, California. That's starting this Friday, just a mere couple of days away. It's March 26th, 27th, and 28th, Friday, Saturday, Sunday are the days of the event. And besides yourself, I know we featured a number of different presenters that are going to be there, and there's such an array of not only presenters but vendors, every type of imaginable thing there related to health and freedom at this event. I've been attended for the last few years. This is the first year that Republic Magazine has a booth there. We have booth 512. They also have an event happening in Chicago in early June. You can find information on that event, the details, at healthfreedomexpo.com. That's healthfreedomexpo.com. And for those that would need to dial a number, their number is 888-658-3976. I'll give that again, 888-658-3976. And I want people to know, Jeffrey, when you're speaking there, I don't know if you have that right in front of you, the details about when and how they can take part in that. And then also, if you have a booth there, I'm not sure. I think you might. I'm not sure if you do or not. Could you give us?
Well, I'm speaking on Friday from 12 to 12:45 and on Saturday from 1 to 1:45. Also, Friday evening, we're going to show the film The World According to Monsanto, which is an extremely powerful indictment against Monsanto. This woman did a magnificent job. The energy that's in the room when you see that film is just palpable. You can cut it with a knife. I'll probably introduce it, may stick around to answer some questions. And that's happening Friday evening from 7 to 8:30. So I don't have a booth, but I will visit you at your booth, and I'll drop off some shopping guides so that anyone who visits your booth, if they want, they can pick up a little pocket guide which explains how to avoid eating GMOs, which is also on our non-GMO shopping guide.com website. And you can also download an iPhone application at Shop No GMO. So go to the iTunes store and get Shop No GMO for your iPhone or iPod Touch.
Well, that'll be wonderful. We'll be very happy and proud to carry those in our booth, and people can pick them up there. So that's wonderful. I'm glad you're going to do that. And I know you speak all over. I don't know. Do you have on your website? Do you have bits of your schedule where you're going to be?
Yes, I do. Although I don't have much schedule for the rest of the year. I've traveled all over 32 countries, 38 states, and But I've cleared my schedule for a couple of reasons. I need to create a documentary. I've done a couple of small films, but I'm going to be doing a major documentary, looking to release it in October, which is non-GMO month. And so I'm going to be pretty busy between now and then. And also, our focus is a lot these days on fundraising because I haven't been doing it very well. And so we made a calculated risk. We realized we would never have been able to accelerate the tipping point with a small staff, but we only had enough money for a small staff to sustain over a long period of time. So I bit the bullet and hired more people and was able to sort of fix bridges just at the time when we're running out of money for the last year, and we're running out of money again. And by the end of October, well, put it this way, we need some money very, very quickly in order to maintain our staff to support our low-hanging non-GMO fruit opportunities, which are now coming out all over the place. People are asking all over for articles and for information, and we're preparing for them. And I want you to know, at healthiereating.org, at healthiereating.org, we have, like, a video called Your Milk on Drugs, Just Say No, 18 minutes for free. We have Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals video, 28 minutes for free. We have a free podcast called Don't Put That in Your Mouth. We've got a video called Everything You Have to Know About Dangerous Genetically Modified Foods, an 84-minute talk where I give a keynote turning 1,000 people into activists. You can not only watch it online, you can buy 100 copies of it for $3 each, or you could buy a copies of the podcast for me giving a lecture for $1 each. We have downloadable free shopping guides. We have a lot of materials for free, and we also have books and DVDs and CDs that you can purchase. And you could also, if you have a website or a publication, you could go to the archived section of our newsletter, Spilling the Beans, and use them all for free. So you could take and reproduce them, and they're used all over the world. You could translate them into different languages. You could shorten them without even talking to me about it. Just don't make any changes without talking to me about it if my name is on it. But this is a way that we provide and package information that we are absolutely sure by experience is compelling enough to change people's diets and which help them to choose non-GMO foods. And then empower people by explaining what the tipping point is so that it becomes viral. So that instead of just making changes for yourself, you realize all we need is about 5% of U.S. shoppers. That's 15 million people, 5.6 million households, to make it clear to the food companies that they're losing millions of dollars, that there is a trend, and that they better start getting rid of GMOs in order to not lose more market share. So only 5%. It's huge leverage. And if you think of 15 million people, that's easy. I mean, we've got 28 million Americans in the country that buy organic food regularly. 87 million people think that GMOs are unsafe, and 159 million people, most of Americans, say they'd avoid GMOs if labeled. So it's not a difficulty. You know, Oprah Winfrey could end the genetic engineering of the food supply in 60 minutes, but let's not just be whining and hoping that someone else should do it. I don't think that's what Republic Magazine is about, waiting for others to do what we need to do ourselves. So the key is that we go to the choir. We arm the choir. We let the choir lead the world. And the thing is, only the choir. We only need the choir. The choir doesn't even have to convince the resistant Americans to tell them about GMOs. We have enough people on our own who are ready to hear it, who want to know what's healthier eating, and want to know why healthy eating starts with no GMOs, and we could get rid of GMOs that quickly. I think it can happen very quickly. Like in the 10 weeks that happened in Europe, we could see something very quickly here. We just need people to get on the bandwagon, to get the information out. And that's why I talk about these packaged pieces of information, podcasts, articles, even a scripted PowerPoint where you can give a lecture fully scripted. Just pull the PowerPoint off of my site. You can become active without becoming an expert in GMOs because we've done that for you.
That's great. Wow, you're really aiding the experts. I know that we're often seen as a magazine for the contemporary, whatever you want to call it, freedom activists, I guess would be a term that has been given. And so there are a lot of activists, and I know many are very concerned of this issue. So that was great, because I was going to ask you, how can people help? How can they become involved? How can they support? And I would say it would probably now be really good for us to know you have more than one website, right, for different
things?
Right,
let me explain the websites, okay? So healthiereating.org, it's also the same as responsibletechnology.org, but healthier eating is easy to remember. That's the major website for our institute. And there's two tabs I'd like you to suggest that you click on. One is the Take Action tab, which lists the GM Free School campaign, how to outreach to healthcare practitioners, a letter you can download to bring to natural food stores, which tells them about an entire retailer campaign kit, all these things that tells you how to educate yourself and prepare yourself and the package that you need to bring to others. The second is the Donate tab, where you can become a member. You can become a member for free, but we recommend that people become a paid member to help contribute so that we can keep our staff and keep promoting these things and get things out. So those are the two tabs at healthiereating.org. The other website we mentioned is non-GMOshoppingguide.com, and then you can also go to seedsofdeception.com, which is the place for our books, DVDs, etc., where we have the shopping cart, so that if you can purchase, and we price things very inexpensively, especially in combination, so you can get the entire library of all of our DVDs and CDs. It's a very popular buy, or a combination of two books and a DVD, etc. Basically, we want to equip people. So we usually have volume discounts, like, you know, buying a dollar each for this audio CDs, things like that, because we want to turn people into active distribution centers. And just, it's a numbers game. I'm trying to put myself out of business so I can get on to something else.
Very good. That's a good goal. Yeah, it sounds like you've done a similar thing. I know we have we sell bulk amounts of our magazines at major discount, pretty much at cost, so that people could activists can get activist copies and get them out, and that happens a lot. That's a huge amount of our distribution. And then we also developed an affiliates program where people can for transactions that occur that they've referred, that they can actually get some commission back. So, you know, I think we've all got to be in this movement of bringing truth out and getting it to people. We've got to be as creative as we can and come up with ideas that work. You know,
now, do any of your listeners not have access to the internet? Should I give a phone number to
there
call?
May be some. I would say yes, that would be good, just in case.
All right, I'm going to give you the phone number for our office where we could take donations and also take orders. It's 641-209-1765. That's 641-209-1765. We're in Iowa. And then I'll give you a number for our fulfillment center where they can, I don't know if they can take donations, but they can certainly sell products, and that's 888-717-7000. 888-717-7000.
Okay. And I know, Jeffrey, we're close to the hour point, and we do have one person that's holding on the phone line. We have maybe a couple of other questions on the internet. Are you pretty tight for time, or do you have just a few more moments, or what?
Oh, I can go past the hour, the top of the hour. I'll be happy to answer these questions for sure.
Oh, super! I appreciate that, because I know your time's valuable, and I know you got a little under the weather there for a little bit, and maybe are you recovering somewhat now, or how are you doing?
Well,
that?
I'll breathe through my nose by the time I get to Health Freedom Expo. How's that?
Okay, good for you. All right, good. All right, you're on the upward trend. Let's see. We've got this is anonymous, so I've just unmuted your line. If you speak, guess if you have a question, we'll hear you.
Maybe that'll be my new name, Anonymous, because that's what you always call me.
Okay.
What I want to know, I have two or three questions, but this is the first one. Well, actually, let me ask the other two and come back to this one, because I don't want to forget the other two. Is there a website which lists which foods we should bar none buy organic and which foods it's okay to buy commercial?
Well, in terms of avoiding GMOs, anything that's organic is not allowed to use GMOs.
Yes, that's a given.
And then the non-GMOshoppingguide.com has the lists of products, both organic and others conventional that are non-GMO, listed on there in 22 different food categories. So we think that the non-GMO shopping guide is extremely important, and so does the food industry, because they say it's one of the main reasons why there's going to be an upsurge of consumer concern and awareness about GMOs, because 95% of Americans want GMOs labeled, but the FDA refuses to do so because they're told to promote biotechnology, and they know people won't eat it if it is labeled. So they ignore 95% of Americans to uphold the economic interests of five biotech companies.
Well, that answers the second question, which is, is GMO labeled? And your answer to that is that unless it's non-GMO, it's not going to be labeled that way.
Right. They're not going to brag about being GM, right? Next.
Okay. The other issue is, the big problem with organic, and in my area in particular, you know, anybody who had the fervor to do so could get a hold of the National Co-op Grocers Association, and it'd probably take you 3 to 5 years to do, but set up, you know, a food co-op. But having said that, I have to travel well, you know, outside of radius to have access to a food co-op, which I do, you know, from time to time. But it is a fair argument and a statement that people are unable to gain possession of GMOs because of the distribution problem to non-GMOs and to to organic food because of the distribution problem. If you go into the Safeway or one of the 7 retailers that they own, they might have 1 or 2 aisles in there of organic food, but that will be the extent of it. So what about the distribution problem, and what's being done to address that, do you know?
A great question.
And I don't know whether or not the distribution problem is intentional, whether they're intentionally trying to keep organic foods away from us, or whether the corporations genuinely believe there is a lack of interest or a small interest.
Well, there's 2 answers to the question. First of all, you don't have to buy organic to buy non-GMO. In fact, you don't have to buy products that say non-GMO on it for them to be non-GMO. Like let's say you want to buy spaghetti sauce, and you go to Ragu in a supermarket, and you look at Ragu Chunky. It contains soybean oil and high fructose corn syrup, both derived from genetically modified crops. Then you put that back on the shelf, and you pick up Ragu Light, and it has olive oil and no corn sweetener. Mm-hmm. So there's a conventional variety, non-organic. Doesn't say non-GMO, but because you know the at-risk ingredients, which is one of the ways to avoid GMOs, you can buy the product without GMOs. Now, you'll find, however, 90% perhaps of the processed, packaged foods will contain some derivative of soy or corn. And so one way to avoid GMOs is to start cooking from scratch more, going to restaurants that cook from scratch more, and you get to avoid some of these very dangerous additives. In fact, in my film, Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, available for free online, you can watch a story of the Appleton, Wisconsin school that switched from the normal junk food that served at schools to freshly cooked food, and the behavior of the kids changed dramatically.
Wow.
So there's some upward benefit.
And that was only school food. That's not dinner.
Right. Exactly. Now, as far as organic goes, it is growing at the fastest pace of all the sections of our food supply. It's still a small, you know, maybe 3%, but it's growing. I know for several years it was growing 20% per year. Now, the food industry is not ignoring that. In fact, they've come in and bought up many of the organic brands. So Kellogg's and General Mills and Kraft own a lot of organic food companies now because they want to participate in that arena. Now, as long as they keep the organic standards pure, then we welcome the entire food supply to switch to organic. We don't want to be an elitist and an exclusive. We want to be pervasive. So I would say the distribution is a function of economics. I don't think it's a situation where people are trying to suppress organic. Well, I haven't heard that that's the case. If someone has found that, please send me an email so I can document it. I think it's that most of the advertising dollars and hence the commercial purchase power goes towards the commercial foods by people who have no idea the dangers that they're getting themselves involved in with genetic engineering and, in some cases, these additives. But we're already seeing, you see, the cost of food has dropped dramatically while the cost of health care has increased dramatically in exactly the opposite proportions. So we end up paying for the high cost of cheap food.
Yeah, agree. Okay. No conspiracy going on that you know of.
In terms of keeping organic out, I would say the food companies now are getting into organic and are very well represented in the organic industry. And there's a premium to be made for selling organic, so I don't see it being suppressed.
Well, okay, let me get your take on another argument. Do you believe organic foods to be, and of course, this is everything included, because even if you so much as buy, you know, a refrigerated can of orange juice, you're going to pay for the cost of the refrigeration. I don't think everybody knows what goes into the price computation of whatever they purchase. But having said that, tell me whether or not organically foods are indeed overpriced, or whether, you know, as far as you're concerned, there is very little markup on them, because they're, I don't know, 1.5 times, twice as expensive as commercial foods?
Well, it's a very good question, and the thing is, every market is different. You know, different supermarkets have different policies. Farmers' markets have different policies. I've heard some people who are tracking it claim that certain distribution channels are elevating the prices of organic. On the other hand, with perishables, you know, if you don't have people buy your organic produce and it goes bad, you end up, you have to include the cost of what you throw away and the cost of what you sell. So I would say it's, I don't have the data points to be able to draw that conclusion, but I will say something that's even bigger, and that is that food is too cheap.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of, the percentage of our income and the percentage of our GDP that we spend on food is the lowest in the world, and it's the lowest in our history.
Wow.
And it's the driving towards cheap food which causes, for example, someone came to a booth that I was at a international food technology fair, and they were absolutely frustrated at a Kraft food salesman from the Kraft booth that was bragging about how their cheese soup had gotten down to only 13% real dairy because they could substitute chemicals that were much cheaper for that tasted like cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a situation where we don't value our food enough, and what happens is our farmers are getting squeezed. We have so few farmers now, it's not even a question on the census. Instead of putting down "I'm a farmer," you have to put down "other." And so I say I like supporting organic farmers. I like supporting local food systems, and I feel like it's an investment in my health as well as the health of the community. And so I don't mind if organic farmers can make a living and keep a field in organic and keep a family farm moving. So I have a different attitude in terms of money when I pay for an organic or sustainably raised product as compared to a conventional product.
I understand.
Any other questions?
Not right now.
Okay.
Thank
well,
you.
We appreciate that. That's great. Okay. And then what I want to do is go ahead and move on to, in fact, this kind of follows on the heels of the conversation that you were just having. And one of the guests, let's see, let me find it here. Yeah, Marion, Texas says, with a high cost of true 100% organic and now GMO-free foods, many people cannot afford to buy the safe food even though they are educated. What do you suggest for those kinds of people?
Well, I also want to add one thing. Organic, I want to make it clear. Organic, I would say, is the first choice to avoid GMOs, because you not only avoid the GMOs, you also get the benefits of organic. A meta-analysis of like over 100 studies showed that there's approximately 25% increase in nutritive antioxidants, and there's an increase in all sorts of vitamins and minerals, as well as nurturing the soil and putting less of a dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico, et cetera, et cetera. Having said that, I know that when I was a student, I purchased food at a food co-op and cooked from scratch, and you could buy beans and grains and things like that. And it's a big demand these days when both parents are working and they have a family to support, and fast food is taken over because of the convenience and the realities of life. But what happens is, if you get the non-GMO shopping guide and you start looking at what's available and you figure out where what's available in your community, it may take 2 weeks, it may take a month to shift to substitute the brands that you've been buying for other brands. Now, some may be more expensive, but others may not be. And by learning the tricks, you may have to make some changes in lifestyle in terms of how much cooking you do or the types of cooking you do in order to avoid it. Now, absolutely, those that are wealthy, those that live in certain locations in the country, will have greater access to healthier food. So there's a class issue here. My hope is to end genetic engineering of the food supply so quickly that we eliminate that class distinction and that geographical distinction so that there's no GM food anywhere. So I believe that it can be done quickly, and I'm confident that it will be done so that this issue will not be an issue soon.
Okay. All right. And Gwen in Tampa, how do you know if sugar listed in an ingredient label is made from sugar beets?
If it says sugar but it doesn't say sugar cane and it's made in the U.S., then it contains sugar beets as well as sugar cane, because there's actually more sugar beet sugar grown in the U.S. than there is sugar cane, and it's always mixed together to form the basis of our sugar supply unless it says pure cane sugar. Now, the more processed something is, the less risk there is associated with GMOs in general, not always, but in general. So sugar is like 99.4% pure. There may be 0.6% contaminants, and you may think, well, that's so small it doesn't mean anything. Well, I would say you can't say that. We don't have evidence to say that that's true. In fact, there was a food supplement called L-tryptophan in the 1980s that killed 100 Americans and caused 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick. It was genetically engineered. They genetically engineered the bacteria to produce the supplement. And it was the genetic engineering process that almost certainly created the contaminants that caused these deaths. And the contaminants were each less than 0.1% or 0.01%. So the actual tryptophan passed the U.S. pharmaceutical purity standards, and yet it was still a deadly tablet. So we can't be absolutely sure that even a small percentage of contamination in a GM crop is safe. But, like I said, it would be safer the more processed it is, because there's no DNA or maybe there's no protein, and many of the other things are isolated.
Okay. All right. We've got Justin in Boise. Not to advertise, but these guys are working on a great grassroots solution to revolutionize organic farming. MyOrganicAcres.com. You get your own organic garden, and they do the work for you. Do you know of them, or any comment on them? Or not?
Well, I think that growing your own food, see, there's a revolution now, okay? You're aware of it. It's a revolution that's not just in our food supply. Paul Hawken calls it the Earth's immune system, which is rising up to combat the corporatocracy. So we're seeing our own response to the corporatization of our food in many ways. And part of that is local food systems. The two main regions for local food systems would be community-supported agriculture, CSAs, where you invest in a farm and get a box of food every week or twice a week. Farmers markets is the other one. There's also restaurants that buy from local farmers. And people can buy direct from local farmers through a whole series of organizations that have been set up to do so. Another way is to grow your own food. And this is done both in areas, in the rural areas, as well as even in the cities. Detroit has a huge program for converting abandoned lots and buildings into agriculture. About 10% of the produce that's consumed in Detroit is grown in the city limits. So back when we had World War II, there were victory gardens. I think it's not something you're going to see advertised by the food companies because it works against their bottom line, but it works towards our health and our self-sufficiency. There are many reasons why growing food close to home is safe and healthier. You have less travel dollars. You can pick things when they're ripe, so they're actually healthier and tastier. You can use the heirloom varieties, which means that you're not using the seeds that have been selected specifically to transport and to pick unripe and all that stuff, which often taste like plastic or don't have any taste at all. You could use the traditional heirloom varieties, which have great taste, and taste is associated with health, taste and color. The tastier something is, typically the more phytonutrients there are in the fruits and vegetables, which are healthy for you. So in addition, the fruit and vegetables tend to be supported by the local climate, local geography, and the local soils, which many people believe is healthy for the people growing and living in those local areas as well. So I would say for any organization that's promoting local and personal gardens, it would be great to support them. And on top of that, there's a great movement now that many people call beyond organic or sustainable, where, see, organic is defined by what it doesn't do. It doesn't use certain pesticides. It doesn't use certain inputs. But it doesn't tell the farmer what they have to do in terms of nurturing the soil and improving the nutrient density of the food. So there's a whole new movement to increase nutrient density, to increase the stewardship of the soil so that it has even higher standards than the organic standard. Many organic farmers are doing it anyway, but now it's being standardized and the information is being shared by groups like Acres USA and others, so that we're regaining and reclaiming higher quality food for us, which is much healthier for us and our children.
Okay. Donna in Tennessee says, it has been predicted that future starvation will not come from food shortages, but rather from the economy shooting into hyperinflation and people not being able to buy the food. Do you have any suggestions for homegrown food seed suppliers to avoid the situation for a family?
That's a great question. Well, you don't have to look to the future to see that lack of food is not the source of people dying because of lack of food. It's unbelievable. We have more food per person than any time in human history, 4.3 pounds per person, and yet a billion people go hungry every day. I've heard 25, 30,000 people die every day from malnutrition and starvation. And in almost every case, there's food around them. There's people that die of malnutrition in the United States. It's not a question of productivity in the field. It's a question of distribution and economic access. And so you don't have to predict in the future in terms of hyperinflation. The principle is being lived every day that it's a question of access. As far as obtaining the seeds, well, I don't have a very big section in our website to identify the non-GMO seeds, but when you're buying seeds, there's only four crops that you might plant in your garden that may be genetically modified: corn, zucchini, yellow squash, and papaya. Now, you won't be growing papaya that's genetically modified if you're outside of Hawaii, because it's restricted to there, unless you buy a Hawaiian papaya and replant the seeds, which you shouldn't do. Zucchini, crookneck squash, and corn on the cob, you got to talk to the seed company and find out that they are sure that it's non-GMO. In the case of corn, you want to make sure that they've tested it so that there's no cross-pollination. So that makes it a lot easier to avoid the GMOs in your own garden. And then try and go for heirloom seed varieties to try these different varieties that you wouldn't get in the supermarket and to preserve the biodiversity of the species.
Okay. And Glenn in Tampa, if you were to remove all GMOs from the planet tomorrow, how would you know if or when there wouldn't be any remaining contamination?
Well, we don't have a technique, unfortunately, Glenn, to remove all the GMOs from the planet. The indigenous corn varieties in Mexico, the source of the genetic diversity of corn on the planet, they've already been contaminated with GMOs. That was discovered years ago. We may develop a technology, but now we can do our best by minimizing the availability of GM so that it's very, very small, so that when we plant new stuff, it's the level of contamination is never above a accepted threshold, and that threshold gets smaller and smaller as we get better and better at cleaning up our supply. So that's the answer. We don't have a way to do that.
Okay. And John in Punta Gorda, Florida, what's your opinion on organic hydroponic growing?
That's a good question. In fact, I have two articles in Urban Garden Magazine, which is a magazine that put a cover story on GMOs and a follow-up story, and they're all about hydroponics. I'm not an expert in hydroponics, and I don't understand the aspects of hydroponics that I would need to in order to have an academic answer, but I will tell you that the soil organisms, they're brilliant. There's magic, there's wizardry, there's amazing stuff that happens in soil. That soil produces all sorts of of trace minerals and nitrogen and all sorts of things that get pulled into the plant that support healthy plants. So I can give a strong plug for binding the soil, and it's completely opposite of what they do with conventional agriculture. Never mind hydroponics, conventional agriculture kills the soil and then adds NPK, three different minerals, thinking that that's all that's needed, completely missing the other pieces. And with GMOs, it gets even worse because the Roundup that they pour onto the plant causes a reduction in the uptake of other minerals like manganese and other things, so that the plant actually gets weaker and more diseased and unhealthier to eat, and that the soil microorganisms end up having more fusarium, which is a fungus, which has a mycotoxin associated with it. So there's all sorts of problems with non-organic, as especially GM, in the soil.
Okay. Well, I know that that last year when we heard you, and if I remember right, it was a dinner setting, and you showed us some things and you spoke, and it was just, I mean, after it was done, I think just about everyone there was either rendered to tears or close to it. And I know our publisher, George Shepherd, was no exception. In fact, he backed it up with some dollars and made a donation, and gladly so. He was very happy to do that. And it just really opened his eyes and touched him. And I know it's going to be no exception for folks that experience, if they come to the Health Freedom Expo and see you this weekend. Once again, the information on that is healthfreedomexpo.com. The full schedule's there. The details, all of the things available related to that will be there. And so I invite you to take advantage of that. We're very much supporting their efforts, and as such, our sponsor this year. And, you know, doing a lot of things promotionally as we're starting to do more and more cross promotions. And I think more of us need to lock arms together and support each other where we have commonality, because that's how we're going to do it. If we're all divided and factionalized, we're not as effective. But if we take action and we cooperate with others wherever we can have tremendous effect. And I think we're seeing that more all the time. Yeah.
I want to add something to that, Earl. With the GMO issue in particular, there's a huge fun factor. You can get the film World According to Monsanto, or the film from the GMO trilogy on natural selection, or Hidden Dangers of Kids and Meals. We have a bunch of films on our site. You buy a film, and you invite some friends over to a non-GMO meal or a non-GMO potluck, and you show it, and you discuss it afterwards, and people get excited, and you loan out your film or you loan out your materials, and then they show it, and they pass it on. And becomes a social and community building activism. But on top of that, it's with food, it's very easy to convince someone to make changes in their diet. You don't have to convince someone about doing something altruistically, even for the environment or for some policy. It's completely hits home. When they think about eating a genetically modified corn chip, turning their intestinal bacteria into living pesticide factories, when they think about their being of childbearing age and most of the babies from GM-fed rats died within 3 weeks, it doesn't take much more to convince someone that healthy eating starts with no GMOs, and you end up with a stack of non-GMO shopping guides that you just can't stop giving away because people say, oh, can I take one for my mother? Can I take one for my friend? And so it turns out, it's really easy, easier than almost any of the other major problems we're dealing with, because it is so market-driven and it's something that we vote with our fork and our dollars every single day, three times a day. So of all the things that are wrong, it's one of the most dangerous and one of the easiest to fix. So I would say take time out of your day or your week or your month to get involved in this so we can get rid of it quickly so we don't have to deal with it again.
Great. Well, that's good. I really appreciate it. I know that with all your traveling, your busy schedule, and then, of course, beyond the weather and the whole host of things, that for you to take the time that you've taken with us today is tremendous. And certainly in the future, we're going to look to have you visit with us again, maybe give us some some updates as they're occurring and bring us up to where we are at that point. It's an exciting future ahead rather than being all discouraging with what's happening already. In just a moment, if you would, it'll be an opportunity, Jeffrey, for you to leave us with some parting thoughts. I wanted to make people aware again that we will have the replay of this posted shortly after this webinar. Just go to republicmagazine.com/webinar and feel free to share it and get it out there because it's important information, as are the other webinars we've done in the past. And we invite you to join us also again next week when we'll have another outstanding guest to share information with you that will help you in understanding the things we're facing today. And so I think with that, Jeffrey, if you would maybe share your quickly give your contact information again, and then if there's any final thoughts, that this will be a good time for that.
Great. So you can go to healthiereating.org, click on Take Action. Please also click on Become a Member or Donate. Go to non-GMOshoppingguide.com or go to the iPhone store, iTunes, and get Shop No GMO. It's a free download. And you can always call to make a donation to our office at 641-209-1765. That's 641-209-1765. I want to share a couple of points before we leave. One is that in my book, Seeds of Deception, before every chapter, I have a little page, a vignette called Wisdom of the Animals. And in each case, I describe how different species of animals, when given a choice, avoid GMOs. Pigs, cows, geese, elk, deer, squirrels, raccoons, mice, rats, and more recently I've discovered the same with chickens and buffaloes. So it's our job to get humans up to the level of animals. We don't have the natural capacity to know that GMOs are so unsafe that we should avoid them. Some animals don't even avoid GMOs even when they're not given a choice. They just don't eat it in any case. So in the process of hearing this, I know that a lot of people develop emotions. They can develop anger towards the companies and towards the government. They can develop fear towards the food supply, sadness that they have to deal with this whole issue. Whatever emotion you're feeling, I'd like to suggest that you process the energy from that emotion into action and to switch from a feeling of victim to a feeling of victor so that you can make this a turning point in your digestive life and your activism life so that you can say, I'll determine which foods I will eat and not leave it up to Monsanto and the biotech industry and their enforcement wing and the FDA. So I would say if you're making that decision and you're making decisions now, in the next 5 minutes after we hang up and you turn off your computer or keep it on, write down what you want to do. Because the longer you wait to make the decisions and commitments about what you want to do from the point of moment that you receive the inspiration and information to guide that decision, the less likely you'll actually do it. So if you want to contact 10 friends, if you want to send the link to this webinar to 10 friends, if you want to post it on your Facebook, if you want to pass on the link to Hidden Dangers and Kids Meals to the parents you know, or go on and become a subscriber to our newsletter section at healthiereating.org. I forgot to mention that. Please do that so we can stay in touch, to keep spilling the beans coming in your inbox once a month or so. Whatever you decide to do, I would suggest that you write it down and commit to do it now while it's fresh, and then keep yourself accountable. And then whatever you do and pass it on to another person, let them know about the tipping point and ask them to make a commitment as well so it becomes viral. So it doesn't become something that you should have done and you thought about but you can't keep getting to it. Put it on the front burner. Make it a high priority. Because this is something that we're doing for everyone who eats and for all future generations, and it's something that we really can win immediately. And it'll be fun in my next travels around the world to make it a victory lap rather than continuing to try and ring the bell to wake people up. So thank you all for listening, and I look forward to seeing you all on the road.
That's beautifully said, Jeffrey. I really appreciate that. In fact, I look forward to seeing you again here in just a couple of days. there in Long Beach. So that'll be great. And I'd like to, you know, not only thank you, Jeffrey, but everyone listening, and invite you to really consider what Jeffrey said today, and to act on it to whatever extent is appropriate for you. That's it for today's webinar. And I'm Earl Bell, and as I said, we've been speaking with Jeffrey Smith, and we'll see you all next week. This officially ends our webinar. Have a great afternoon and evening. Goodbye.